Hey, how's it going, everybody? Welcome to Sparks of the Paranormal. I am your host, John Sparks, and I am excited because this is our very first official episode of the podcast, and I've got on a good friend of mine, co-worker, Mr. Thomas Caulfield, who has experienced things that made him want to look into Bigfoot. And if you guys saw on the Instagram page, I posted up a picture and I kind of zoomed in and blew up on a couple of things that you're like, hey, oh my goodness, there are Sasquatches in this picture. And this guy he's seen a lot of evidence of Bigfoot, and I'm excited to kind of dig into stories with him. Thomas, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Just a day off and feeling a little tired, but I've been thinking about Bigfoot all day. You got me re-engaged here and trying to recall. It's been a lot of years involved in this, and I'm still enjoying it. Can't let it go.
That's fantastic. So you've been experiencing stuff for a long time, right?
Yeah.
So what got you interested? Where was your first kind of moment where you're like, hey, there's something to this. There's something out there.
Well, I think I've been a professional Boy Scout, and so that means I've been in scouting my entire life and still am to an extent. So from a young age, probably when I first started having encounters would be camping once a month for my whole life around 10 years old. And, you know, we'd go to New Mexico, go to Texas, and there's a lot of wild hogs, bears. I've experienced all that. But so many times we'd be camping out and, you know, everyone's asleep, and then something comes walking through camp and it's not small, you know, and yeah. You're wondering what in the heck, you know, and you're not the only one having the experience. The next morning, it's like all the guys are like, was that you? No, was that you? No. And none of the leaders and nobody. And we're out in the middle of nowhere. But we've got something walking by, brushing the tent, things like that. That probably happened 5 times at least, mm-hmm. You know, during as a youth. And it was clear if it was a bear or something like that, because they're after food and after our bear bags, which are 50 feet between two trees, and they've scratched off all the bark trying to get, you know, and they're jumping, trying to tear the bottom out of the bag and all that. So, I mean, when it's just walking through and brushes the tent and keeps walking, or you hear breathing, that's another thing. You're just kind of a low, rumbly breathing sound as they kind of walk by or something. You just wonder, you know, what it intrigues you. And, of course, the Patterson-Gimlin film, well, I don't know what year that was.
I think that was the 60s,
60s, 70s? Yeah, I was born in 69.
Yeah.
So as a kid, I'm seeing this stuff on TV and going, Dad, is that real? You know, and I'm thinking maybe there's something to that. And there's always, when I saw that, it was more than, oh, this is interesting. It's that there's something in my spirit saying, look into this.
Yeah.
You know, and it sticks with you as a kid. And here I am, 51, still interested in finding out what in the heck is this, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of when it started out. And then as I grew up on the farm, my family farm in Texas, we have about 2,500 acres and then another 1,000 acres that are attached to that to do oil business, because mm-hmm. You need a lot of land to have your wells out.
Yeah.
And over my life, I learned that business from my grandfather and my father. And so it got to where I was living on the property and taking care of the oil wells, and it's so remote, mm-hmm. You know, and it's starting to have experiences. And that's where one of the pictures that you saw there is from the cabin that I lived on the property there.
So what was your first, like, when did you first go out looking and trying to find Bigfoot?
Well, trying to think, and I remember just there was things that happened that were unexplainable. Like I found a footprint on a riverbank, and it looked like it was about the size of my foot. I mean, it's about, I wear an 11 and a half. It wasn't huge or anything, but there's Gabriel River, and it's a real remote part where it wouldn't even be a good area to take a canoe down, because you have to constantly get out. It's not like there'd be anybody down there, yeah, other than cattle, maybe someone working on an oil well or something like that. But the banks of the river are about 20 feet up, and the after that one step, it had to go straight up the bank. And the only thing up there is a dugout under a tree hanging on the side of the riverbank. It's like all dug out. And so I couldn't even go up there to investigate. But those are the kind of things that I would notice. And I started thinking to myself, well, with this much property, there could be something living here that no one knew about. So yeah. I was just trying to take a broad perspective. Then I found out that a species of, it's a Mexican panther, I believe it's called a jaguarundi, that was supposed to be extinct in Texas, actually lived on that property.
That's crazy.
And we could track them. So I was thinking, well, maybe something else could live out here that no one knew about. And if it was anywhere in Texas, maybe it could be here. And so I started looking around more and more, and that's when I found more rock stacks and started looking at maps and trying to figure out where they could be living to be secluded enough to never be found by anybody. Yeah. And so what I noticed is we would have these huge sloughs that would go down to the river, and they were spring fed, but they would just trickle all year round. But then when it would rain, you know, that would fill up and that would kind of become the river, part of the river. So there was one space on the map that was super green, and it was a slough that, two sloughs that split off and joined the river. So it created an island, and it was like, wow, a triangle. And that's what it looked like from above. It would be a triangle. And so I named it Bigfoot Island. Because yeah, I figured if there, that's the most secluded place, you'd have to swim to get to it.
Yeah.
If it was, you know, raining. Otherwise, there would be good spring water flowing on each side of it. So I kept trying to get to it, but I wasn't real willing to swim.
Yeah.
And so I'd get as close as I could. So I realized that the only way I'm going to see what's on this island is if I wait till winter. So I started living on the property, doing other things and doing, you know, observing what's going on. And this is all next to a pecan orchard. And so I waited till winter to where I could see what was good. It was so much foliage, you couldn't see what was on the island. So I could kind of see after everything had died, and I noticed structures on that island.
What kind of structures were you seeing?
Just like stacked woods type, teepee type structures, typical stuff, yeah, and some bowed trees, some of that. Now if I back up a little bit, before I started living on the property, I used to go down, say, once a year or so, just to have fun. So I go to this pecan orchard. It's the most beautiful area down there, just to fool around with my dogs. And I do want to bring up the point that it's important to squatch with dogs. And the right kind of dogs. I had two dogs. One was the right kind. The other one wasn't. the Golden Retriever Chow Mix, she was so brave, she would scare anything off. You know, she would always run toward everything, start barking, and just, you know. But the other one I had, and I still have, is half Catahoula and half Plot Hound. The Catahoula is a state dog of Louisiana, and they use them to hunt hogs.
Yeah,
the Plot Hound, the state dog of North Carolina, used to hunt bear.
Yeah,
so between the two, so you had a brave dog that would jump on the back of a hog, and you had, and we mixed with a dog that had, and that was a sight hound.
Yeah,
and then your Plot Hound is more of has a better nose, a good tracker, but very brave as well.
Yeah.
So the combination of the two and makes, and also the Catahoula is sneaky. The Catahoula is like a cat.
Very quiet.
Quiet. They'll sneak up and they won't run way ahead. They stay with them. So I had the two dogs together, the Golden Retriever Chow and the Catahoula Plot together. And normally what happens is if the retriever chow sees anything, she tears out after them. And, you know, she'll run down deer and everything, corner them and everything. And then, of course, the Catahoulas always watching side ham. But she's real laid back. You're just walking along behind the other one, keeping an eye on what's going on. And then when the other one gets in trouble, she'll go bail her out and bring her back. You know, and that's what's happened many times with raccoons and skunks and all kind of problems. She'll go, the Catahoula will watch the other one fumbling around with the animal, and then Catahoula will come and kill it and then bring the other one back.
Wow.
Just like that, before you even know what's happened.
Yeah.
And so anyway, this time they're both running the fence lines and smelling and doing all their things, and then they freeze. And both of them freeze, and that's unusual. And they're just looking up this slough, not the slough that I'm talking about with Bigfoot Island, but near it. There's another little slough that is a small creek that, or not a creek, but a spring that'll run after a rain, and it'll run down to the pecan orchards. Well, they were looking up the hill at where this spring runs from and just frozen. And they would not move. And I walked 100 yards up to them, and they were just frozen. And they don't ever do that.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and then they're looking up there, and I start looking up to where they're looking, and I'm thinking there's got to be something. Oh, and before all this happened, I did some wood knocks, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, on the trees, because I first got there. I usually do that when I haven't been there in a year, and I show up and I'll do some wood knocks and then start walking around. See,
just kind of let them see in the area.
See if anything shows up or see if anything is happening. But anyway, I'm sitting there looking for probably 10 minutes. I can't see anything in the woods, but they're still frozen looking up there. And so I just start taking pictures because I figure, well, if there's something, maybe I can figure it out later. You know, because I can't see it and nothing's moving.
Yeah.
And so after a little while, I mean, we did some calls and I didn't think there was anything to it really, other than the weird behavior by the dogs. And I got them to get away from there and go the other direction. But then later that night, reviewing the photographs that, you know, we're looking at here, we saw what looks like a large male in the background. Female closer up, and possibly a few young ones there.
Yeah, and that's the picture that I have on Instagram for those of you who are joining along here. You can go take a look at that at Sparks of the Paranormal on Instagram, and I've blown up where the female is. I've blown up where the male is, and potentially in the bushes there, I blew up with what looks like it may be one or two juveniles that are potentially hunched over in the brush. So was that the moment that you were like, oh my goodness, for the first time?
Yeah, well, that's when I knew that they were there.
Yeah.
That's when I knew that there was something to this, you know, because I can see them, you know. And what's interesting is if you look at that picture in the very center, in the very far, far background, you'll see part of the cabin that I used to live in. So they weren't far from where I was living, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they were around. And so after that, I started some experiments. And the reason why is because I was listening to different, at the time, Blog Talk Radio was big. And there was Bigfoot Tonight Show. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's Chuck Prawl. I think he's passed away now. But that was a great show. And I would listen to that all the time. And they had different... And so I got some tips and different things. And I had been putting out... I guess you could call it bait. But there were so many wild hogs on the property that I wasn't sure if it was Bigfoot taking the bait or coyotes or hogs or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's another important thing about the dogs is that... we'd be walking and you'd hear it sound like people talking in the woods. And I was thinking, what in the world could that be? And then the dogs would flush out whatever it was because I couldn't even exactly tell how far in they were. But they would flush out 80 hogs, a pack of 80. Okay, so I like to use the dogs to kind of eliminate other factors and make sure that what I'm seeing is could be Bigfoot or something paranormal or whatever. So, and that's what I would do. And I would use the dogs for that, and also put out bait. Like I'd hang a turkey leg on a barbed wire fence and then do some calls and leave and then come back, you know, maybe 4 hours later or so, and it would be gone, you know, different things like that. But you never really could tell exactly what was taking it because there's so many animals out there. So what I put on the fence, I told you wrong the other day, what I put on the fence was a baby rattle.
That's right.
I hung a baby rattle on the fence. Yeah. And it was taken. Now there was another location where I strung a rubber ducky by the neck and hung it on a tree because I really felt the presence there.
Yeah.
And also had heard some things, but I wasn't sure. And so I did that, and they took it. So who?
That's crazy.
Whoever was out there wanted to play with some toys. You know.
So how long ago was this?
The rubber duckies, probably 2 years ago.
So when you just for my curiosity, since you, like when you go back, have you found them ever again?
They're gone. We used to do things. Also, I had a wilderness church, and we would meet out there, and we would do monastic hikes and different things like that. And what I would do is I would have lessons that I put together in like a Ziploc bag, and I would hang them on a tree by a string. And as we would do a hike, we'd discover them and stop and take a breather and talk about, you know, what we found. Well, a lot of those bags were missing overnight, and also, but some of them had been chewed on. So I thought, well, maybe deer were taking them, but they aren't taking rubber ducky.
They're not going to take a baby rattle either.
No. So off, and that was a low hanging baby rattle.
Even coyotes wouldn't take that.
And a lot of times I would go out and make calls, and I'd get response by so many coyotes and all kind of stuff, you know, but and cats and all kind, you know, but I wouldn't get a Bigfoot response. Now, I did take a group of guys out one time, and we decided we're going to go to Bigfoot Island tonight in the middle of the night. You know, these guys are like tough. Okay. Military guys.
Yeah.
And they had guns and, you know, laser flashlights and all this stuff. And so we decided we're going out there. Well, they got as far as the moat, basically, and they're not swimming, so they're not going any further. Yeah. But they were so scared. It's so remote. And we got back out of there. We were all torn up, hurting.
Oh, yeah.
But we got back out of there. And then they said, well, where else could we go to, you know, investigate this? And I said, well, why don't we just, you know, it takes a lot of patience. This kind of thing. One of the things I had to come to grips with was this is a lifetime adventure. It's not like you're going to go out in the woods and make a few calls and there's something, I find something. No, it's going to be over your lifetime, you're going to find things. And you try to put these things together and try to think like a Bigfoot, which they're so further, they're the masters of their domain of the woods, and we're not even close to their ability.
Oh no.
So even attempting it is absurd, but you have to. You have to try. You know, if I lived in the middle of nowhere, what would I do? You know, how would I think? How would I survive? You know, and those are the places where you start on the map and try to find some evidence. But these guys, they were like, well, what do we do? I said, well, why don't we just make some calls? Be patient. Well, they didn't want to be patient with that. I made some calls. And they wanted to talk and have a good time. They wanted to go somewhere else. They wanted to do this. And I said, let's just sit here and listen. You might not get a response right away, you know. And sure enough, you'd hear it. But it'd be like a female response. You could tell. More of a scream type yell.
Yeah.
And it would be, and they would be like, where is that? And I'm like, well, it's on this creek. So we head that way, you know. And when we get there, we find some broken trees and stuff like that. So that's, you know, what we do is just follow the evidence. And if we don't have any, we try to create some, you know, create some response or something, somewhere to go. And that kind of lets you know where they are at the time and stuff like that. But, you know, I listened to a lot of podcasts. I got involved with Bigfoot tracker, Rick Dyer.
Yes.
And, you know, he's the hoaxer and everything else. But he does, one thing he always said that I liked, he said, you know, you got a bunch of armchair people talking about Bigfoot. They're not out there doing it.
Yeah.
If you want to be involved in this, you need to be out in the field. And he always talked about that. And so some of his supporters at the time, we got together and we went to Boggy Creek.
Whew.
So we decided we're going to get out, you know, boots on the ground and see what, and they wouldn't let you camp there. But we went ahead and hiked in. We just decided we were going to set up and just stay up all night and listen, see what would happen. And of course, everybody had their experiences, lifetimes of experiences, and we got into talks about religion. We got into everything, and we didn't really find any evidence on the way in. We were looking. We didn't know where to stop to sit.
Yeah.
You know, and so we kept looking for evidence, and nothing was conclusive. You know, you might have had the tree kind of, you know, growing as a bend, but it wasn't clearly held down by something or upside down or anything, you know. Yeah. So we're just walking along, and that's what I was saying. Let's just keep moving. Just keep moving. And next thing you know, big wood knocks. Ooh. And everyone froze. And I was way ahead of these other guys. But it was interesting because we all froze at the moment, and I turned around, and I was about 100 yards ahead of them, and I turned around and looked at them, and they turned around and looked at me, and we're like, we're staying right here. We're not going anywhere. This is where we need to sit, you know, because we've got confirmation now, because we don't know of anything else that knocks on trees.
That's crazy.
And from then on, we just sat, and we had a military mosquito netting over us, which gave us a blind. Unless you were right at the same angle with us, you couldn't see through it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but we could sit there and talk and just all night, you know, hang out. Well, we kept doing that, and we heard coyotes, all kind of calls and all kind of things, but nothing that we knew was Bigfoot. Until a tree fell in the middle of our camp.
Oof.
In the middle, and we're just about to doze off, you know, and everyone's kind of stopped talking because we're so tired.
Oh yeah.
And all of a sudden a tree comes crashing down in the middle of our camp, woke everybody up, of course. But you know, who knows? Could have been a natural thing, it could have been a pushover.
Yeah.
Who knows? But what the only thing we thought we had figured out was that if we were in Bigfoot's domain, we were in the hallway because they weren't living there. And the creek was here, and there were several places for them to be according to where the wood knock was and everything. But we were in the travel zone between them all.
That's crazy.
So if they're moving at night, they're going to have to come past us.
Yeah.
And if we were in their way, they were probably, that could have been them letting us know that we need to get out of their way. We're in the hallway, and they're trying to go to the bedroom or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it's like a corridor in the woods where we were.
So big wood knocks, potentially a massive tree pushover in the middle of Boggy Creek in the middle of the night. That is crazy.
Yeah. And we found our way out of there, out of the brambles and everything that next morning. And it was funny because I was kind of sick to my stomach because we were eating junk all night and talking and everything. And so I went into the woods to do my business, and there was a buck that was snorting right by me. It scared me to death. You know? Anyway, that's beside the point. That was kind of it. But that was our first experience with Rick Dyer. Yeah. And the reason why we got involved is because of the camper video. Familiar with that? There was this one video that he put out, and no one could explain it. It's called the camper video. Okay, the camper video was just a video that randomly came out on YouTube didn't have any name associated with it at all. And everyone was so intrigued because it looked like this old Bigfoot. And it was so well done. It would have been the best special effects artist would have had to do it. It was so incredibly believable. But what it ended up being, and I believe it was out for about a year before Rick Dyer came forward and said, I shot this. And what he meant was he shot it on video. But what was happening is there were 911 calls about a large creature that was hauling deer carcasses across the road and things like this at a homeless camp. And also he would come in to the homeless camp and steal food and trash and all this kind of thing. And it was like an older Bigfoot that was just being opportunistic.
Yeah.
It really probably couldn't hunt much anymore. So that's what people thought. Well, Rick, there were so many sightings and everything, and Rick heard about that, so he went down and camped out with the homeless people. And what he did was he went and bought a rack of ribs and nailed them to a tree. And then when he heard something at night, and he just unzipped his tent just a little bit to see what it was, and it was an old Bigfoot kind of sitting on near a tree gnawing on these ribs. And he shot video, I think it was with his cell phone, through the tent slit.
Wow.
And you could see the face and the traps and the back and everything. I mean, you could really see it really well. And so everyone was real intrigued about this. And then he ended up involved in a movie called Shooting Bigfoot. And in that movie, it was a pretty well done movie and everything, but it wasn't the same Bigfoot.
Yeah.
I guess it was fake, obviously. I don't know. No one really knows to this day if it was fake or not, but he had shot a Bigfoot in San Antonio. And the whole thing was similar to what happened in it. So I don't know. We kind of got intrigued by all that, and a group of us that were listening to the show, we got together, and Rick was encouraging us to put boots on the ground, to get out there and do our own investigation. So we got together and went to Boggy Creek.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So guys, like I can't claim that I believe in Bigfoot. I can't claim that I don't believe in Bigfoot. I want to believe, you know, it's like the X-Files. I want to believe. And you're right up here, near where we work, in the Appalachian Mountains. There are, Thomas has been up there and seen what look like small structures that have been built. So what we're going to do is John Sparks is officially going to go on his first Squatch hunt. And sometime either this coming up week or the week after, we're going to get out there. We're going to go Squatch it. And I'm stoked out of my mind for that. But Thomas, I appreciate you coming and hanging out with us.
Sure. I loved it. Love to do it again.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're definitely going to have you back. Guys, thank you for stopping by Sparks of the Paranormal. Share this with your friends. Share this with your family. We're available in six different platforms right now. I don't even know all of them off the top of my head. Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor FM, Pocket Cast, Radio Cast. There's so many that we're on right now. We're working on getting onto iTunes. But guys, what do you want to hear next? Leave me an audio message on Anchor FM. Let me know what you want to hear next. Do you want a ghost story? Do you want more cryptid encounters? Do you want more Squatch stuff? Do you want to hear about UFOs? Let me know what you want to hear. Thank you for coming out. Thomas, thank you again.
Thank you so much. And big shout out to Thinker Thunker on YouTube.
Absolutely. Thinker Thunker. We're going to check him out. We're going to see what that's all about. That guy apparently can catch a hoax before anybody else knows it's a hoax. So we're going to check that out. Guys, thanks for stopping by again. We love you. God bless. And we'll talk to you next time on Sparks of the Paranormal.